I'm Farai Chidea, and this is The Takeaway.
And I'm John Hockenberry. And in a world where dinosaurs ruled the Earth for 50 million years, that's right, the Jurassic period was about 50 million years long. And for that time, predators the size of buildings roamed the planet, stomping and chomping on anything. The meat eaters in the dinosaur era were like nothing we've ever seen since. So imagine what it would be like to be a cat-sized meat-eating predator in a 50-million-year period of T-Rexes and other giant predators. Joining us to talk about the significance of a fossil discovery, which maybe changes our view of what it must be like to have been a meat-eater during the Jurassic period, is Nick Longrich, paleontology research associate in the Department of Biological Sciences at the University of Calgary. He's the co-author of a paper released yesterday on the discovery of North America's smallest carnivorous dinosaur. It was in the Journal of the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Nick, the little meat eater that could, is that what we call this fella?
I guess if you want, sure.
But you wouldn't want it to be a pet, would you?
You know, these things were probably not the world's brightest animals. They would have been a little difficult to train and probably kind of vicious. But, you know, some people like pets like that, so I guess you can try that.
Now, the significance of this discovery is that this small creature was not believed to exist in North America. What were the challenges for a pint-sized or a small-sized meat-eater carnivore predator in an era of T-Rexes and other giant dinosaurs that we are more familiar with?
Well, at the time, there were a couple species of large tyrannosaur that lived, and these animals are about 30 feet long and weighed several tons in weight. And there are a couple of species of medium-sized predators, dromaeosaurs or raptors as they're popularly known, and these are about the size of a coyote or a wolf. So there's quite a few different species that would have been competing with for smaller prey items. It probably could have outcompeted them. It would have been more nimble and more agile and more easily able to subsist on small prey items. So it had a bit of an advantage there, but obviously facing one of the larger animals, it's going to have a little bit of a trouble trying to keep from being made into lunch itself.
What does the presence of this lunch-avoiding predator fossil tell us about the biosphere at the time of the Jurassic, particularly in North America? It was a period of great abundance if you were a meat eater.
Well, it's actually Cretaceous. It's late Cretaceous.
Right.
It's coming near the end of the dinosaur reign, and it suggests that they're kind of really doing a broader range of things than we thought. So we've got very large predators, kind of medium-sized ones, about the size of, you know, coyotes and wolves. And then we've got substantially smaller things, cat-sized. And with that broad range of sizes, we think we've got a range of ecologies and ecological niches these things are filling.
And did this particular dinosaur, first of all, what's the actual name of the dinosaur? Because kids all over America want to learn to pronounce a new dinosaur name.
Yeah, it's called Hesperonychus elizabethae.
Hesperonychus? Say it again.
Hesperonychus.
Hesperonychus.
Yep.
And big, scary teeth?
We don't actually have any teeth, but judging by we have close relatives from China, and these things have really long dagger-like teeth. So you wouldn't have wanted to get bitten by one of these things.
And the distinctive tiny, tiny dinosaur brain, correct?
We have no idea. We don't really have any skull bones at this point. I mean, that's why it took so long to find this, is you don't really get very complete skeletons from small animals.
Well, tiny
tiny
meat eaters, you know, get crunched in the Cretaceous period. Nick Longrich, paleontology research associate at the University of Calgary, thanks so much.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.